Are you ready? As early as next week, many of you will have children heading back to school. I don't know if that's a nail biter or a celebration, but it's coming. Dr. Seuss says, you have brains in your head, you have feet in your shoes, you can steer yourself in any direction you choose. Well, today we're talking all about executive function, the part of our thinking that does the steering, and how you can guide your children and teens in building executive function and self-management skills. This is LD Expert Live. Welcome to the LD Expert Podcast, your place for answers and solutions for learning differences, dyslexia, and auditory and attention challenges. I'm your host, Jill Stowell, founder of Stowell Learning Centers and author of the new Amazon number one bestseller, Take the Stone Out of the Shoe, a must-have guide to understanding, supporting, and correcting dyslexia, learning, and attention challenges. Our guest today is Seth Perler. Seth is a well-known executive function coach, educator, vlogger, and just a guy who cares about seeing outside-the-box kids succeed. He helps struggling neurodiverse learners turn it around so they can function in a baffling education system and launch a successful future. His weekly blog, SethPerler.com, gives parents and teachers game-changing answers to help their students navigate school and life. Welcome, Seth. It's so fun to have you back with us.
Absolutely. So good to see you again. Really good to be here. Super excited.
Well, school is starting in the next week or two. It's another transitional year with lots of unknowns. Is there anything in particular about this year that you feel students and parents need to be aware of as they start school?
Yeah, there is. You and I were talking recently about this, and yeah, I have a few concerns actually, even since we talked. But they're in a few buckets that we can kind of describe pretty easily. The first one that I'll mention is it really does have to do with our kids' mental health and mental well-being and social health. And my first concern for this particular fall is that there's so much divisiveness in the United States. And I know that in other countries, things may or may not be different, but in the United States, people are very divided and there's a lot of distrust between people and anger. And there's something called a collective trauma. So as a world, as a country, even we're having collective traumas, which means that we essentially all have our nervous system in our body has a sense that things, we may not be safe or we may be being threatened. And it's very important that the nervous system be on alert all the time in our life. That's how we survive. But what's happening now is everybody's on higher alert than normal. And everybody's kind of, there's just a lot of divisiveness and division and anger and frustration. So my concern is that, you know, you and I, Jill, and a lot of people in this field talk a lot about parents doing their own deep inner work. Well, there are a lot of people on planet Earth that don't do their own deep inner work, that don't take responsibility for themselves, that don't have emotional regulation tools. And there are a lot of parents that have kids that are telling their kids things. What my concern is that schools, school therapists, school administrators, and teachers are teachers who we need to be supported, that the teachers are not being supported enough. There aren't enough therapists and people in the school to support these teachers, to give them the time they need, the class size, the small enough class sizes that they need, the resources that they need to manage what might happen this year when kids go back to school. And then there's conflict with the kids, more conflict than usual because everybody is so heightened and people have such different opinions. And our teachers going to be given what they need to support these kids to move through difficult conversations and conflict. And what's that going to do to our collective trauma? Anyway, our kids going to experience more trauma. Our teachers going to experience more trauma. Are more teachers going to leave the school system who we need, that we already have over 50% of teachers leave by year five? So those are some of my concern. My first concerns is the conflict and how prepared we are. Another concern that I have right now is the screen time. You and I were talking recently. I've been doing a lot of screen time because I'm doing some stuff on my business and my work, and I am sick of it. But I can take a break. I can say, oh, I'm feeling it. I'm going to get off the screen, go for a walk, take care of myself. But kids are expected, if they're doing hybrid or if they're online, to be with that screen for X amount of hours, for X amount of days. It's not good. Not only is there, the lack of connection, of human connection when you're doing screen time, or less human connection, I should say, but it's not good. I don't feel like that's a concern of mine, that it's too much screen time, that there's going to be more screen addiction, also more just sort of, we're just going through the motions. We're going to give this homework. Our kids are going to sit in front of this thing and act like something's happening when the quality of it is so diminished. And I don't think that we should stop education right now or anything, or just be in person if people are unsafe or something like that. That's not a solution, but it is a very, very real problem that concerns me, how much screen time they're experiencing. So I do fear for the screen time. And then I also fear for the loss of education. Now, I don't like that term, but just that it is a loss. It is not in any way, shape, or form as good as it could or should be. And the system without times like this already has a lot of dysfunction and a lot of amazing teachers who are lifesavers and who do so much good. But there's a lot of there's a lot that's lacking still. This is just making it even worse. So I just want our kids to be happy and successful and have good lives. And those are, I think, the biggest ones that pop out to me. So screen, the emotional stuff and not having enough supports in place. And the third one, which isn't coming into my mind right now because I just woke up and used my brain too much to say those three things.
the loss of learning. Right. And I think everybody's been really concerned about that too for the last year. You know, it's interesting. You talk about this emotional piece and I think building an awareness within our families, if we can, as we send our kids off to school, if they're going, well, whether they're going back into the classroom or online, kind of helping kids see not just their perspective of the challenges, but how hard it is for teachers and how hard they're working trying to figure it out. You know, I saw I was watching the Olympics and they were talking about how the Tokyo Olympics are like the Olympics of kindness, that the athletes are all supporting each other from different countries so incredibly well. And so maybe we want to, you know, just kind of set our kids up and say, you know what, it's still a really tricky year and it's really hard for teachers too. So, you know, how can we be kind to each other? How can we be kind to our teachers? Just to kind of set it up. And then you said something about with the screen time. Screen time is so stressful on our nervous system. And you mentioned, you know, that you can get up and take a walk. And really, parents, if your kids are in a hybrid or still on online school, taking a walk is immediately down-regulating to the nervous system. So when your child has a little break, make sure that they get up and they move and they walk. It will help with some of that intensity and screen fatigue. So, Seth, in general, as kids start back to school, I think a lot of kids are starting on site. In general, as kids start back to school, what advice do you have for students just to set themselves up for a successful school year?
The one other fourth concern that I wanted to mention while you're talking is the unknowns. It seems like we're going down a road, seems like a nice clear road. We seem to have some certainty. We don't. We don't know what's going to happen. And that concerns me too. So back to your question, what can we do to set them up for success? Well, I think what you just said is brilliant. Priming, having pre-conversations, having conversations before we ever even set foot in the school about kindness, about generosity, understanding, compassion, empathy, having a lot of conversations around that, how to understand other people's perspectives, what might other teachers be going through, other kids be going through, just planting the seeds, just planting the seeds. And how we as adults, you know, communicate what our values are and why we have those values and how to treat people, with acceptance and understanding, and how to not take things personally and things like that. So all sorts of questions, to talk about, maybe even the four issues that I just brought up with the kids, but those sorts of things, have the conversations often. And when we're having the conversations, do more listening than talking, less problem solving, less rescuing, less, you know, just really trying to have curiosity. Wow, why do you feel that way? Rather than jumping in. So just really holding space so that they can say things and they want to tell us things. When things are really hard to tell us, they know that we're listening. Because a lot of times, a lot of kids feel like they're not being validated. So, but you asked for my guidance for kids specifically. So we have elementary, middle, high school, and college kids. We have these different ages that have sort of different expectations, but in any of those situations, what my guidance for the kids would be for any of those situations is, number one, to declutter, downsize, and minimize your life. Get rid of the old books, the old toys, the old clothes, the old everything, stuff under the bed, stuff in the closet, stuff digitally. So get rid of physical stuff, get rid of digital stuff. Now, I work with kids with executive function challenges. So my part of my philosophy is the more stuff they have, the more stuff they have to manage. And these are kids who already struggle to organize, struggle to manage things. So to me, it really starts with decluttering. And then we can work on the managing. So I would wish, if I had a magic wand and the students wanted to prep for this year, is get rid of old stuff you really don't need. Stuff you want, fine. Archive it, you know, put it in storage, whatever. But really, I would wish that their spaces were pretty downsized to what they really want to have in their life and need to have in their life. So that once they start getting all the assignments or they need a big clean desk or table to work at, that they are making sense. Their brains are able to make sense with an uncluttered space. But you also have digital clutter. So you have physical clutter in the space. You also have digital clutter, and you also have mental clutter. And as far as digital clutter is concerned, my advice to the kids, I would be starting, and this is what I do with the students that I work with. We start decluttering. We unsubscribe from things that they never open. We talk about digital safety. We go through the email inbox, get it cleaned up, teach them how to organize the inbox, how to make labels, little things like that. But decluttering digitally and then decluttering mentally or emotionally would be, you know, us supporting them. And I'm not going to get into that. But so I would start with the decluttering. And then once we're decluttered, then I would start building the systems. Now, what I talk about, parents and teachers out there, I use a term called Frankenstudy. And I made that up inspired by Eddie Van Halen's Frankenstrat guitar, where I like guitars, and he used parts from a bunch of different guitars. But what we can often do as adults is we can say to kids, hey, this is how to use a three-ring binder, and this is the planner you're going to use, and there's no buy-in and no ownership and no guidance. Now, kids who have more, who are more linear, more systems thinkers, more naturally, they seem to pick up on this stuff through osmosis, whereas the kids who struggle with executive function, they can look like they're being willful, or like they're not motivated, or like they don't try hard enough. And those are big misunderstandings. They do not know, they need guidance in how to systematize. So my number two thing for these students, the guidance to them would be to create their systems for organization. How are you going to organize your socks and your shoes and your papers and your folders and your binders and your books and your digital world? So creating systems mindfully, thoughtfully, intentionally before school starts. Because what often happens is school starts, things seem organized, but what happens, and then especially with middle and high schoolers, they're like, leave me alone, mom, dad, I don't want your help. And you have to have that relationship and that buy-in to be like, well, sorry, for, you know, the next 6 weeks, we're going to meet with you once a week, and we're going to go through the entire backpack, help you reorganize it, help you reorganize your desk, and help you reorganize your digital world. If y'all did that for 6 weeks, and sort of made it a thing, then that would really help, because, and then not telling them what to do and where to put the paper and whatever, but very patiently guiding them to take the ownership and the buy-in. And what I do when I'm working with clients is I'm like, where should that paper go? Why? Cool. I like your idea. That's a good idea. Okay. Where should that paper go? Oh, you want to throw it away? Are you sure you don't need it? Do you want your name on this paper? And so it's a very long process, but I'm asking a lot of questions, so that they're taking the ownership and the buy-in. And I can let them be wrong. They can say, oh yeah, I can throw this away, and I can let them throw it away. And in my mind, I might know that it needs to be turned in because I may have seen the online grade book and I know that it's a zero in the grade book. So I keep that in my mind so that before the end of the night, we're not going to actually throw it away. But we have to give them that space, because what often happens is that we'll see, they say, oh, I need that paper. That's the magic. So we have to really be aware of how much we're rescuing or enabling or saving when we're in these processes, and how much we're sort of interfering with the process by adding in our own two cents when we shouldn't. Now, there are times we should, but I just really want to stress to be really mindful about biting our tongues and really allowing the ownership and buy-in and the mistakes to happen in safe ways. But we want to start building systems for organization, systems for organizing digital data, systems for organizing your links, your passwords, all this stuff proactively. I want my students to do it proactively. I don't want them to wait until it's 8 weeks in, they have 4 F's and 2 A's, and now we have to start figuring out where the breakdowns are. Proactively build in your digital systems, your links to the teacher portals, to all the portals they need, all the passwords, all that stuff. We should ideally never say to a kid, what's your password for that? And then say, I don't know, I haven't checked it this whole school year. And I have had so many clients who come to me in like November, and that's the case. So we want to be proactive, declutter, then organize systems for planning, systems for organizing. And the last system I'd probably say is systems for advocacy. So proactively, you know, kids knowing how to reach out to teachers and say, hey, I don't understand where the homework is. I need some help here. I'm struggling with content. I didn't have time to do the homework, and or proactive from the parents saying, hey, my kiddo didn't do the homework last night and we're not going to do it. We can't do this. We just had too much in the family right now and there's a lot of stress, and please don't fail the kid for this and ding him with a zero. We don't have the capacity and we're not trying. We are doing everything we can to do what you're asking, but we don't have it today. And we're going to have to do a lot of that this fall.
Definitely. And I think something really, really important that you said in there is that you're doing this together. The student has to buy in. If they don't buy in and you just tell them, okay, you're going to do this, you're going to do this, you're going to do this, they're not going to use those systems. They have to be a part of creating them. And so all of those questions are really helpful. And it does take time. So, you know, it's sort of like front loading the year, taking the time now to ask those questions, let them do the thinking, let them kind of guide them in creating their systems, and everything will go smoother then for the rest of the year if you take that time now. So,
yeah. Well, and I love the word front loading. That's one of my favorite words. And while we're on that, front loading the planner and the calendar, whether it's digital or paper calendar, I don't care. But every single thing that can get in the calendar for the entire year, I do set up with my students proactively. So we get the big wall calendars. I get that. I try to get every single family to have the large wall calendars. They're desk calendars. They have two holes on them. They're $5 at any office store, black and white, simple. But we front load the whole year. We highlight, block out every single day off for the whole year. I want the kid to be the in the process of this. You know, there are kids there. I've had high schoolers who don't even know that when they look at a calendar, like we'll be doing it and they'll say, oh, this month, the 30th is on a Wednesday. It doesn't end on a Sunday, because some kids actually think like it just ends on the last block of, you know, like it's amazing that some kids still don't know how calendars work. And then you get to see, oh, they didn't even know this. Now we can teach them that. But I want them to front load the whole school year. Look at the school academic calendar, and every day off, we block out with a highlighter. We might write in, you know, on Valentine's Day, a kid might put a heart in. On, you know, New Year's, they might put a little decoration. But either way, I want them to front load. And it's amazing, parents, when you see them start to front load, that how it comes together in a more concrete way of what they're getting into for the year. What is school year means, how many days there are, what they can look forward to, the times when they have off. Just please hear me. It is an amazing process that really works. Again, digital or paper, I don't really care, but for them to take time to be a part of the process of front loading. And you can do a lot of it for them, but they need to be part of the process. So if it takes them forever, for example, to take a straight edge, and they want a straight edge and make all the lines on the things, and you know, they do one line and you do three, for example, cool. But so that's what I got there. Sorry to interrupt you, but it's just, I love that word, front loading, in the calendar, in the planner, and with their materials. But
that's so huge about the calendar. And I actually, for kids that really struggle with time, I love the wall calendar. Because now they can see really large. They can get a whole perspective as opposed to the little pieces. You know, even our teens can only see 2 or 3 days in advance in their mind. They can't see very far in the future. I remember I used to say about my son, he couldn't see past his nose. And that's really true about teenagers. They really can't. You know, having a big calendar where everything's on there and they can look and get the whole picture is really, really helpful. And spending all that time with it in advance, then they understand it better. Because you're right, we've run into brilliant kids who didn't understand how a planner or a calendar was put together. So we can't make any assumptions, and really working with it together is great. Seth, thank you. Thank you so much for being here. I know you're super busy getting the conference all set, but we always love having you.
My executive function is
it's being challenged now, right? So, but we just always enjoy having you and appreciate your passion and your heart for helping students and parents. So
likewise, Jill's heart is in this work. And I like that about Jill.
Thank you again, Seth, for the executive function pro tips. Thank you to all of you who are watching live or on the replay.